The California drought is becoming the talk of the country. Even the New York Times has picked up the chant. Hello, and welcome to Conversation with Bill Sharman. Today we'll be examining the drought in California and how it's affecting us here in Oroville, and how one man, Mike Glaze of South Feather Water and Power, looks at the situation. We'll also talk with Mike about other topics. First, though, let's go back to the New York Times. In a recent op-ed piece titled "The End of California," Timothy Egan writes, "California, from this drought onward, will be a state transformed. The Dust Bowl of the 1930s was human-caused after the grasslands of the Great Plains were ripped up and the land thrown to the wind. It never fully recovered." Egan goes on to write, "The California drought of today is mostly nature's hand, diminishing an Eden created by man. The Golden State may recover, but it won't be the same place." Well, the fact is there are a lot of questions and very few solid answers. Questions like, what if the endless days without rain become endless years? And of course, the climate change crowd is stirring up fears of a mega drought. The state is pushing a new consumer awareness program, emphasizing that brown is the new green. And the reference is not to Governor Brown. For its part, the California State Water Resources Control Board has approved statewide water conservation rules for our nearly 40 million residents. But there are many who believe the regulations will be tough to enforce and don't really address the state's primary problem, water rights. California's water rights and rules systems are broken and obsolete. And of course, it's not just a water problem, it's a politics problem. Ultimately, who will the decision makers be? Who has the authority to make the decisions? What about we vote on how to use California's water? Well, many believe that's the last thing big agriculture interests would want because of the imbalance between rural and urban populations. So at this point, let's turn our focus back to the local perspective from Mike Glaze, General Manager of South Feather Water and Power. Mike, can you simply give me a general overview from your chair about the drought situation in California and how that applies specifically to South Feather and Oroville?
This is unprecedented as far as the state's concerned. The four-year drought cycle is unprecedented in this century. The South Feather Water and Power Agency has been in the Oroville community since 1919. I've only been here 22 years, but in that history of South Feather, which was called Oroville Wyandotte Irrigation District originally, there has never been a drier cycle. So not only is the state experiencing something unprecedented, so is South Feather Water and Power. Fortunately for South Feather, the crisis is not nearly as impacting as it is to the state. From a statewide perspective, if this goes another year, there are going to be communities that are in very dire straits. And it's not to be taken lightly. It's not to be discredited as being a crisis. It's a genuine crisis.
And how does that translate into day-to-day living for other communities in other parts of California? And in a minute, we'll get into why it's not nearly as dire for South Feather.
Other communities are having to mitigate their problem by imposing draconian measures on their customers. Those measures range all the way from limiting and curtailing the amount of water that is available to them, requiring them to minimize their usage of water in ways that will literally destroy investments they've made in landscaping, literally force them to function in their homes and businesses in ways that are totally unprecedented and unheard of, and possibly even harmful to them. Water purveyors are imposing these mitigations also by charging them extremely high rates, punitive rates, for it to be so painful to pay for the water they use that the customers will be willing to take drastic measures not to use that water, even if it means losing landscaping and not having opportunities to do things that they normally would do or even abnormally would do. So the level of effort that's going into getting people to conserve will definitely approach and exceed the painful and the punitive levels.
And is this something that we can conserve our way out of?
I personally do not believe that this state can survive another year or two of drought by conserving only. Unfortunately, it's too late to do otherwise. The time to have built additional storage that would have mitigated this problem had to have happened a couple decades ago. The process now for building additional storage would take another decade before the first one probably would be able to come online. That's far too long a process to be able to have that as assistance and help in solving the current drought cycle crisis.
So is this really a political issue when you look at it from all the different angles?
It's no longer a political issue because the drought is here. The crisis is here. The mitigating of the drought is now a physical issue.
You're listening to Conversation with Bill Sharman. Today, my conversation is with Mike Glaze, General Manager of South Feather Water and Power. We're discussing California's drought.
The political process, the political aspect of it, actually occurred, as I said, decades ago. After Lake Orville was built, Orville Dam was built, the state government, state legislature, developed a mentality that no new reservoir should be built, that environmentally it was not something the state wanted to consider, and roadblocks were thrown up far and wide against building new dams and building new reservoirs. The Orville Dam was built in the 1960s, and there hasn't been any new storage of significance built since then.
And there's nothing on the books, right?
There are a couple on the books. There's Sites Reservoir over on the west side of the Sacramento Valley, but the legislature rejected proposals to fast-track the development and construction of that facility. So even in the middle of the drought, there is an unwillingness on the part of legislators to accommodate projects which would add storage.
So this is my term, but it's back to politics as usual for California, it sounds like.
Well, California has a very well-established philosophy about environmental issues, and the vast majority of the legislators are oriented that way. So whether you're oriented that way yourself or you're very conservative, the conservatives are in the minority in this state and probably always will be. And therefore, we should assume that that will continue to be the direction that this state goes, that is, not wanting to build additional storage.
Let's take a little different tack for the next few minutes and have you speak about something that is a little more pleasant when it comes to water, and that is the history of South Feather Water and Power, why you're in such a great position relative to the drought situation, the water situation in California, and how that came about.
That's a long story, Bill, but I'll try to summarize it. Some of the facilities that the agency presently owns and operates were actually constructed by the miners in the late 1850s and early 1860s. Facilities that essentially opened ditches, open canals that brought water down from the South Fork of the Feather River to gold diggings in and around the Oroville area, Palermo, Bangor, essentially southeast Butte County. Those canals for mining purposes essentially were then taken over by private land and water companies when gold mining began to wane because there was a belief that Butte County could become the next Orange County, as it were, the next boom area for land development that was occurring in the late 19th century, early 20th century in Southern California. And so land companies bought out the miners' canals to bring water down to Southeast Butte County for the purpose of irrigating what was proposed to be the next boom industry, and that was citrus and olives. That went well for a couple decades, but those land and water companies did not sell the land like they thought they were, and so began to have difficulty having a viable business enterprise. At that point in time, it was decided that a public agency, an irrigation district, should be formed that could take over the operation of those now no longer mining facilities, but irrigation facilities, and tax, with property taxes, the people that they were serving to ensure that there was enough money to maintain them. And so Orville Wyandotte Irrigation District was formed in 1919. It actually had the ability to levy property taxes at the time. That's no longer the case, but that's how revenue was generated back then. Eventually, over time, water began being sold as a commodity, and people just paid a rate based upon how much they were using.
This is Conversation with Bill Sharman. Today, my conversation is with Mike Glaze, General Manager of South Feather Water and Power. Mike is giving us a bit of a history lesson about the agency that was in place before South Feather Water and Power.
Orville Wyodotte Irrigation District, or OWID is a common initialism that people are familiar with, operated that system, and it grew, and they expanded the ditch and canal systems to where eventually it had about 110 miles of open ditches throughout southeast Butte County. But as the area grew, more and more orchards and open land began to have homes built on them, and the city of Oroville expanded, Kelly Ridge came into existence, and the need for domestic water became more of a demand. And so the agency began to put that raw water into pipe systems, filter it a little bit, throw a little chlorine at it for disinfection, and that water began being provided into people's homes. Around late 1970s, laws were passed that required water for domestic purposes to be treated to a certain standard called the Clean Water Act. And so the agency at that point in time developed its state-of-the-art water treatment facility called Miner's Ranch Water Treatment Plant. That began an era of having a bifurcated system where the domestic side was wholly put into a distribution system and was very healthy and clean water, and then there was still the irrigation system that sent raw water down open ditches for irrigation purposes. But at the same time, or over the decades as the district was operating, some very smart people came along and said, Orville Wyandotte Irrigation District has an opportunity to develop a hydropower project on the South Fork of the Feather River. And after a number of decades of struggling and fighting and legal battles and engineering and finally construction, two major reservoirs, Little Grass Valley Reservoir and Sly Creek Reservoir, were built along with four hydropower plants. And so today, the agency has a very robust water storage facility built primarily to accommodate the hydropower project, but it certainly put the agency in very good stead as far as being able to withstand droughts. Today, for all purposes of consumption, domestic and irrigation, we will divert less than 20,000 acre-feet of water out of those reservoirs. Today, as I'm talking to you, Bill, there is 114,000 acre-feet of water in storage. We can store up to 160,000, but this is a drought year, so we don't have full reservoirs this year because we had a dry winter. I only have 114,000 acre-feet in storage, but that's still over 5 years of total consumption if there wasn't another drop of water that fell onto our watershed. So we're in extremely good shape. Now, we draw those reservoirs down through the end of the year for power generation purposes, but we don't go below 60,000 acre-feet. So there's still 3 years of storage if there weren't another drop of water falling on the watershed, even at the end of the year after we've generated full loads for power. So we're in extremely good shape.
You're listening to Conversation with Bill Sharman. Today, my conversation is with Mike Glaze, General Manager of South Feather Water and Power. Mike is in the midst of telling us how grateful he is for the leaders of the agency in years past.
We had some great people with great minds who developed our system and really did wonderful things for this community.
Talk a little bit about your relationship, and when I say you, of course, I'm talking about South Feather Water and Power, but the relationship between South Feather and PG&E.
South Feather Water and Power, formerly OWID, has had a long and good relationship with PG&E. When the agency was considering developing the South Feather Power Project, it partnered with PG&E. PG&E actually provided the security, the guarantee for that funding, to pay the debt service on that funding. And so beginning in 1959, the district entered into a 50-year agreement with PG&E to develop the project, and PG&E received all of the power that project generated. In return, the agency's debt service was paid for, all operating and maintenance expenses were paid for, all capital improvements were paid for, and there was a small revenue stream, a little more than $1 million a year, that came to the district to offset some of its expenses. That 50-year agreement has expired in 2009. Prior to its expiration, we negotiated a new 20-year agreement with PG&E, a power purchase agreement, which we're presently in. That new agreement is a much different agreement, and now the revenue that comes to the district is much greater. We no longer have a debt service on the power project, so there's no need for that, and we're strictly now a wholesale generator. We've assumed all risk for the project. We always operated it, but essentially PG&E indemnified the agency 100% fiscal indemnification prior to the new agreement. Now we assume all risk, but we also enjoy the proceeds of that power generation. So it has put the district in a very favorable fiscal situation and has allowed us to now be much more capable of dealing with issues and growing. It's allowed us to reduce our water rates, to subsidize our water rates. Right now, our customers pay about 40% of what the actual cost is to treat and distribute the water. So we're in a very enviable financial condition as a result of our hydropower project and our good partner, PG&E.
And you touched on the rates in a general sense, but tell the listener how good it is to be a South Feather Water customer.
I had a reporter call me yesterday asking or saying that he had just reviewed an American Water Works Association survey of water rates in the state of California. And he called to ask, how is it, South Feather Water and Power, that you have the cheapest rates in the state? And I said, well, it's just good management. And then I said, well, the truth of it actually is that we have a hydropower project that subsidizes those rates. It has nothing to do with management, of course. And so he was talking about the various rates that he has reviewed around the state, and the difference is incredible.
This is Conversation with Bill Sharman. Today, my conversation is with Mike Glaze, General Manager of South Feather Water and Power. Mike is comparing the water rates that customers of South Feather Water and Power pay compared to the water customers of other local agencies.
Even locally, where we charge 42 cents for a unit of water, and a unit of water is 748 gallons or 100 cubic feet. South Feather charges 42 cents for that water. Probably the next cheapest would be twice that. And then there's some private companies in the area that charge four and five times more than that for the same amount of water. So we actually claim to have the cheapest water in the nation, and I think we can back that up.
Not just the cheapest water, but talk about the water quality.
Well, you're certainly forcing me to brag on South Feather, which you know I hate to do. But in fact, not only is it the cheapest, it may be the highest quality. And the reason it's the highest quality is because it comes from the South Fork of the Feather River. The South Fork of the Feather River is very pristine. There's no grazing. There's no mining. There is nothing that is generating pollutants that come into the water. It's just snowmelt and rainfall that falls in the wintertime, comes into the streams, and then comes down and is collected in our reservoirs. Turbidity is about the only thing we really have to remove from the water before we can put it into pipes and send it to our customers. And turbidity is just sediment that happens to come into the water when there are storms and there's turbulence because of the high flows of the water. In the summertime, when there's no high flows and we're using predominantly just the water straight out of the reservoirs, we could almost get away with putting that water straight into the pipes and doing no filtration, adding a little chlorine just to ensure disinfection while that water stays in the pipes and goes to the most extreme points. But we have an extremely high-quality source water, which gives us the ability to produce an even higher-quality product water that goes to our customers.
You're listening to Conversation with Bill Sharman. Today, my conversation is with Mike Glaze, General Manager of South Feather Water and Power. So, Mike, your water does not come from Lake Oroville.
Absolutely not. All of our water that our customers drink comes out of the South Fork of the Feather River, and we take it out of the South Fork before and above it gets to Lake Oroville.
Okay, with the time remaining, let's shift gears again and talk about some other work that you do through what is called Oroville Economic Alliance. Give us a bit of history about that and your role in that, please.
Oroville Economic Alliance was formed a little over 2 years ago. South Feather Water and Power initiated the formation of that partnership, and it is a partnership of both public and private entities in and about Southeast Butte County who are interested in and have a desire to see the Oroville areas, the Oroville communities' economic well-being enhanced. The partners are the County of Butte, the City of Oroville, the Oroville Area Chamber of Commerce, and the Oroville Economic Development Corporation, and of course, South Feather Water and Power Agency. In the past, these entities have all done good jobs in attempting to stimulate the economy, but often there wasn't a cooperative effort. And in fact, often there was a competitive effort. And so what we have attempted to do is bring this group together with a common goal of working together to stimulate the economy without any regard for who gets the credit. The outcome we desire is the creation of jobs, not the creation of a reputation of success. We only care that we bring good manufacturing jobs or good manufacturers to either start a business or relocate a business or expand a business here that will generate good family-sustaining jobs for the area. Manufacturing and job creation is the foundation for any community's good economy. When jobs are created and people can build homes and can sustain their families, then retailers will come in because they see that there are discretionary funds that the residents of a community have to enjoy products and services, and so retail will follow manufacturing. Tourism is already pretty much self-sustaining, but again, will be enhanced by the existence of new jobs.
This is Conversation with Bill Sharman. Today, my conversation is with Mike Glaze, General Manager of South Feather Water and Power. Mike is talking about his work as the founder of Oroville Economic Alliance and his passion for bringing new business to Oroville.
Over 5 years, we'd like to see 1,000 new jobs created through our efforts. So it's a long-term proposition. It's not a flash in the pan. It's not something where you see immediate success, and it's an expensive proposition.
And can you give me a quick evaluation of how you're doing with this process to date?
We have focused, first of all, on branding and marketing, focusing primarily on what are called site consultants. Those are firms that work for manufacturers, large manufacturers, who are looking for new places to start or expand or relocate their business. These consultants go around the country looking for optimal places for their clients. We think we have a good brand and a good marketing product. Now, when we're successful and we draw attention, then what? How do we handle that? What are we going to do? So the effort that we are just beginning now, and it will be about a $50,000 project, is to develop what we're calling the values proposition piece. And that will essentially be a report for all intents and purposes, but it'll be a very well-packaged report that takes a number of parcels, 7-8 parcels in the area that are viable for manufacturing development, and it will provide those site selectors with all of the information they could possibly need. It will essentially do their job for them as far as developing the information, what it would take to process, the incentives that are available through the city and the county, investment opportunities, anything that might stimulate their interest in that parcel or help them know whether or not that parcel would suit their clients, their manufacturer clients' needs, we can just hand it to them because they'll come into the city and they say, okay, you got our attention, now what do you got? And this values proposition piece will essentially be, here's what we have and here's what you need to go back and do your job. In addition to that, Oroville Economic Development Corporation, one of our OEA partners, Oroville Economic Alliance partners, will also be providing staff that will essentially be a handholder, for all intents and purposes, a facilitator for these site selectors when they come to town, showing them these properties, helping them talk to the right people, essentially facilitating what they need to do to ensure that they have everything that they need regarding the development of these parcels. So we think we're on a good track.
You're listening to Conversation with Bill Sharman. Today, my conversation is with Mike Glaze, General Manager of South Feather Water and Power. Mike sees a bright future for Oroville, which he calls California's business oasis, an area that he sees as very business-friendly, with abundant affordable land, a ready workforce, a strategic location, and of course, South Feather's lowest-priced, highest-quality water in the country.
If you want immediate results, they don't happen. As I said, we've been working now on this for 2 years. We know that this is going to go on for a number of years and is going to be expensive. It's going to require significant funding. The city of Oroville has offered to put up $50,000. We have an anonymous donor who's willing to match that $50,000. South Feather Water and Power has, by the end of this year, will have expended $300,000 on this effort. And so as the momentum grows, we expect that others will step up and say, You guys are doing the right thing. We want to help, and we want to help fund it as well. We also know that we're doing a good job because a major business magazine called FDI Magazine, FDI stands for Foreign Direct Investment, acknowledged Oroville as one of the leading American cities regarding foreign direct investment. It did research on 421 cities in North, Central, and South America, and it labeled Oroville as number 5 out of 8 micro cities. A micro city is 100,000 population or less, for its foreign direct investment strategy. So the things we're doing, our marketing, the efforts we've been making at getting Oroville's message out there, caught FDI Magazine's attention, and we've been ranked amongst the top American micro cities regarding foreign direct investment strategy. So that's pretty cool, and I think verifies that at least we're doing something right.
Now the sign can say, as you come into town, Oroville, an American city of the future.
There you go. That would not be an untrue statement now.
Mike, thank you for your time, and hopefully we'll be able to revisit some of the things we've talked about again today in the near future.
My pleasure, Bill, anytime.
You've been listening to another conversation with Bill Sharman. Today I've been speaking with Mike Glaze, General Manager of South Feather Water and Power, and founder of Oroville Economic Alliance. For more information about Oroville, California's business oasis, visit www.cabusinessoasis.org. That's www.cabusinessoasis.org. And let me leave you with these few final thoughts. California's drought may indeed bring big changes to our state, but the end of California? I think not. The Golden State will continue to be golden. If the drought continues, California will be forced to rely even more on what it's been known for a long time: imagination and ingenuity. And I think that you've heard a lot of that today from Mike Glaze. This is Bill Sharman. Thank you for listening to 97.1 KHP.